Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Hello and welcome to Internet Advisor Podcast 1810 for March the 10th, 2018. I'm Foster Brown, the co-host and producer of the show. And tell me, if your Uber or taxi showed up without a driver, would you get in? Well, this seems like a futuristic scenario. It's actually a lot closer than you might think. We'll be exploring that topic in this first hour, and we'll show you how to take revenge on those shady robocallers. Well, it's time to say hello to the guys who are in studio with us right now. My tech support, and that's starting with Mr. Gary Baker, down in Florida, right, Fort Lauderdale.
Hey, Foster.
Good to have you aboard here.
Great to be here.
And also with us behind the keys, we've got Ed Rudell, our tech expert, and also sliding the keys around nimbly there.
Always great to be here, Foster. Thank you.
Good to have you here, Eddie. And Kirsten Thomas, our newest member of the team. Good to have you on board as well, sir.
I am so geeked. Let's rock and roll.
Well, we're going to start off, guys, with a little bit of a tech round. Some things happening this week, in particular with Microsoft. And Gary, we've chatted here. I don't know if you've caught up with this. Microsoft is going to be putting the end to a couple of things coming up very soon. One, probably, I don't know if most people know what Windows 10S is. Anybody?
Well, Windows 10S was Microsoft's solution to the Google Chrome OS. You know how Chromebooks were becoming so popular in school? Right. They were hoping to do the same thing with this. And if you remember, Microsoft's first Surface, there were two different. There was the Pro version of Surface.
And that's the other one. Yeah.
Was like a version of like 8S, if you will. It's a minimalistic OS operating system. Well, Microsoft basically says they're going to drop the Windows 10S, but it's really not going away. It's just going to be included as another...
Broken out into other packages now.
Right. You know, when you purchase Windows 10, when you download it, it basically comes with all versions of Windows. Windows Home, Windows Pro, Windows Enterprise, and now Windows S. And depending on what license you purchase, will then enable that feature.
I gotcha. Okay. So that's... But the other one that kind of... I went gulp when I saw this first, Gary, was that Microsoft is going to be dropping Outlook on the web mobile apps for iOS, Android, and Android by mid-May. And I thought, what? But apparently, Kasten and guys that pitch in here, it's not as bad as you might think because they're actually going to take it and have a separate application, is right?
Well, the application's already there.
Yes, I thought so.
Almost two years to the day, Microsoft bought a company called Acompli. And Acompli was my favorite app on the iPhone. It was phenomenal. And I'm like, oh no, Microsoft's bought this company. They're going to ruin the culture. They're going to just go backward instead of forward. But you know what? Microsoft was really smart here. The app has continued to evolve, and the development team has stayed isolated from the rest of Microsoft.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they're so darn good at what they're doing, and the features that they've incorporated into the mobile app are now being incorporated into the native app.
But, you know, Gary, that hasn't always been the story, has it, with applications?
Well, no, but I think that's what's going on right now is that Microsoft feels that the native apps with this new functionality included there's no need for OS for their operating system apps, right? Windows 10 apps. And that's probably the right move. Not everybody. In fact, this is kind of a non-issue except for a very few people that kind of liked it. And, you know, they're a little bit vocal about it, but you know, Google takes and says, you know, let's try something. And they let their people experiment, and if it doesn't work, they kill it.
How about
as they should, right? Let's try it.
Yeah.
People don't buy it. let's kill it. And that's what's going on here.
The other thing is that Microsoft has had a history of having multiple versions of the product. And what happens is that makes it very difficult for the developers to keep up, because now they're developing three different versions. Well, you know what? Make one version, enable certain things based on what you're licensing, but just make that the best darn product. So I'm glad that Microsoft's finally got the religion, because in a competitive environment, they've got to give the best tools out there. And you know what? I'm not a Microsoft fanboy, but they're finally doing something right.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm confused here. So there were basically two apps that I could download to my Android or my iOS. Both of them were called Microsoft Outlook.
Yeah.
And one of them, well, one of them was obviously called Microsoft Outlook, and the other one was called Microsoft Outlook
for the web.
For the web. That is confusing. Leave it to Microsoft on that. So, okay, so this is not going to impact the Microsoft provides web-based versions of Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. A lot of students use them.
Yeah.
And so apparently this is not going to impact that at all.
Not at all.
No.
Okay.
No.
Perfect.
It's, and as I think you said, Kasten, it's already been out there for a while.
Oh, yeah.
This separate application. That's why, but it confused me a little bit when it says, do you want Outlook as a separate app? I downloaded it and said, yeah, sure, I want Outlook. And then I didn't really realize where to go to use it. Was I going into the web apps or was I going to go into the separate application? But this is going to make it much clearer because they're going to pull the plug on it.
Well, that's
entirely
why consultants like me love complexity.
Okay, yeah, clear as mud.
That covered the ground.
And if we add some acronyms, we'll further confuse people.
Oh, heaven help us. We got some help calls from, by the way, thank you for using the email on our homepage to send us questions. We love that when that happens. And this week, Shane got one. From Bill Roney, I believe the pronunciation of the name is. He is asking about an external hard drive. He said, I'm looking to buy an external hard drive for backup. Do you have any suggestions or preferred brands? I use it for pictures and old tax files. I'm aware of the cloud, but do not feel good about using that. And that came through on our email from our homepage. Great. And Shane answered him. Then I'll see what you guys want to pitch in on. He said, I would not be doing my job or you service, a good service, if I didn't say the cloud is the only truly safe and secure way to do your backup and recovery prep option. But he didn't give him another one. He said, we've tested several units over the years and found the Silicon Power SP Armor, a 60 USB 3.2 drive, test very well. Nice unit, affordable, very reliable, and you can get it on Amazon for about $58. Nice going, Shane. Hey, we'll come back in just a minute to talk about self-driving vehicles. Imagine this, my friends. You've ordered up an Uber ride or a taxi, and you hear a little beep, and you go out to the front door, and lo and behold, there is no driver in the car. Would you get in? Well, while that scenario seems a bit futuristic, it's actually a whole lot closer than we might think. And with us to talk about some of those issues of driverless cars and how close that is, and many other things, is InsuranceQuotes.com car columnist Tim Spell. Tim, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Well, thank you, guys. Nice being with you.
Glad to have you on board. Now, we should also say, Timmy, you've been following autos for quite a while for Hearst Media out of the Houston Chronicle, am I right?
Yes, I have for about three decades. So,
and actually, this article that I'm talking about right now is a beginning. It's a kind of like a beginning of a series. I think it's there are eight installments in there, I believe.
There should be about eight on driverless vehicles,
Okay. And folks, if you go to insurancequotes.com, look down the left-hand side of the page there, and you'll see the link to the articles that we're talking about with Tim and we'll be talking about in this this next section here. Well, Tim, let's just start off. We're talking about that whole new notion of how close the reality is of driverless vehicles to normal people like any of us, as it says here, you know. Call for an Uber or a taxi, and lo and behold, nobody there.
You know, it really depends on who you talk to. Just recently, the Center for Automotive Research made a prediction that, you know, less than 4% of new car sales will be driverless, you know, by 2030. so they weren't too optimistic. However, on the flip side of that, the auto manufacturers are a lot more confident.
Yeah.
And they're making predictions like 2020, 2025.
Wow.
And, you know, the technology is not the likely holdup in this because they're really going great guns. It's unbelievable what they have out there. But, you know, you have state control, liability, insurance issues, approval, and public perception.
Ah. Tell me about the public perception. Well, what's the deal with that?
Well, you know, it is a leap of faith. To get behind, it's pretty unnerving to get behind a vehicle that is driverless or even semi-autonomous, like a lot of them are today. And so, you know, if the market isn't there, you know, then there's going to be a problem. So,
yeah.
You know, the auto manufacturers are taking a gamble, but they're putting a lot of stock into it.
Yeah, this is going to have a big impact on us here in Southeast Michigan with the auto industry here. This is where it's going to kind of is literally where the rubber is meeting the road right now.
Yeah.
I tell you, go ahead. It certainly would be nice to see everybody else get a driverless vehicle, autonomous vehicle. Because I would feel a whole lot safer than having, you know, drivers behind the wheel and all those other cars on the road. They're going to make a lot more mistakes.
Plan, yes.
Especially in those darn roundabouts.
Oh.
So these are level two, aren't they?
Yes, they're level two that we have today. There are some that approach level three, and they're, you know, real eye-openers. Cadillac has their CT6 Super Cruise, and it's a handoff the steering wheels, a situation under certain, it only works on divided highways. There's an 85-mile-an-hour speed limit, and you can't do any sophisticated maneuvers with it. But you can keep your hands off the steering wheel. And then in 2019, you're going to see an Audi A8, and they have what they call a conditional automated driving system. And it, too, you can keep the hands off the wheel. And where it's of good use is in stop and start traffic.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You can hands off the wheels, it'll accelerate, brake, steer, and even, you know, start back up from a dead stop. So
it sounds like driving in Los Angeles.
So, you know, why do you think we're having maybe some struggles with driver adoption? I've been using autopilot in my airplane. I now have autopilot on my boat. Why don't we have autopilot in the car?
Well, you know, the problem is, you know, you have a lot of legal and insurance liability issues, and that's going to vary from state to state.
Hmm.
And I believe it's, you know, your state that has now said that the operating systems will be at fault if there's a problem. So, and then you have you have to get federal approval for a lot of things because these cars just don't sync up with a conventional car. You know, if you don't have any steering wheels, you know, you can't have a safety dictate that says you have to have an airbag and a steering wheel. You know, so
yeah.
There's so many things to sort out on that level.
It's interesting. So it's like the technology is there, Gary, you're saying, but I'm sorry, with the levels, explain, if you would, just step back and explain that to me. Level two, Gary, you said...
let our guests explain.
You basically have six levels.
Okay.
Starts off with a level zero, and that would be... you know, 1965 Volkswagen Beetle, you know, it's all controlled by humans.
Yep.
Level one would be like certain control systems, cruise control.
Okay.
Maybe automatic braking, you know.
ABS.
Yes. Adaptive cruise control. But, you know, fairly simple stuff that we have now.
And probably and almost every vehicle, and to some extent, has that, right.
Yeah. So you get... And then, you know, there's a There's also, you have an assist that keeps you in your lanes, keeps you from swaying your lane. So we're familiar with those type of things. Now, you get to level two, which is what the semi-autonomous cars have today. And they have to offer, I think it's probably at least two simultaneous automated driving features. So you can have, like, acceleration and steering, or steering and braking done by the vehicle. But still, you have to have humans for the safe operation.
Okay.
And, you know, any kind of sophisticated maneuvers, traffic signals, hazards, there has to be somebody in the car.
Okay.
But the Cadillac I mentioned and the Audi, they start to blend into that level three category where the car can manage it all, but under certain conditions. And then there's a level four, and that would be a car that's fully automated in some driving scenarios, but not all. So in other words, it might be a situation where it wants you to drive on surface roads. But when it comes to a highway, it'll take over.
There's
condition.
Okay.
And then level five, which everybody's excited about, is when the car is, you know, completely capable of self-driving in all situations. All you have to do is enter the destination, and that's it.
Right. And then level six, you said? Is there a level six?
No, it's not level six. It was a level zero, so.
I got you. That makes the six of them. I got you. Okay, so the final frontier then would be level five.
Level five, yeah.
The vehicle is taking itself. And it sounds like, you know, between here and there, it's not so much the mechanic or the technological advances need to be made, but we got to sort out a lot of legislative and litigation potentials as well.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, and, you know, of course, I can't say that the technology is all there, but it's pretty close. But when you think about having to account for everything that could come at you on the road, that's pretty daunting.
Yeah, that certainly is pretty daunting, yeah. Listen, we're coming up on a break in just a minute. I want to, when we come back, Tim Spello's with us. He is a auto columnist from Houston. He's been working down for a long time. Right now, he has a series of articles that are appearing at insurancequotes.com. Tim Spell, we're going to continue talking about the driverless future and how close that is. All that coming up here on the Internet Advisor. Thank you so much for joining us, Tim. We'll be back in just a moment to continue our conversation. Well, in some ways, we're talking about the possibility of a future pulling up to your front door in a not too far distant future. We're talking about driverless vehicles. How close are they? And we're having a conversation with Tim Spell, who is the insurancequotes.com car columnist. We should mention that when you get to the insurancequotes.com site, of course, it is geared towards getting you signed up and looking for insurance quotes for you. But the area we'd like to point you to is an area that's on the lower left side of the homepage, where you can click on this series of articles that Tim Spell, who has been covering auto features for the Hearst Media and the Houston Chronicle for close to, what, 3 decades now, Tim, that you've been doing?
I think it's about right, huh?
Wow. And we're talking about the future of this driverless, is there a driverless future going on here? I'm wondering, guys, if we're going to see this public perception kind of chipped away by fleet vehicles. You mentioned Uber and Lyft, rather than the individual owners.
Well, I'd like to see my pizza delivered by a driverless vehicle, and then I'll start building some confidence in it.
Okay.
But do you have to tip them?
Well, Gary, go ahead.
That's a great question. Great point.
Just saying no tips?
Yeah. I'm wondering. Go ahead, Tim.
Okay, well, you mentioned that, and I think you're absolutely right. Really, the first thing that we're going to see, totally driverless, is going to be commercial services.
Mm-hmm.
And as you guys know, Detroit, that GM, you know, they announced, with no manual controls, no steering wheel, no pedals. And so next year, and it's pending some government approval, they're going to be putting out a modified Chevy Bolt, the electric vehicle that's going to be used for ride hailing services.
Ah.
So you get into it, and there's several screens so passengers can with the vehicle, but it's going to be totally driverless.
Wow, that's what unit coming up when?
Next year.
19? Wow.
Yeah. Well, the General Motors just announced that they're ramping up their productions of the Volt by another 50%.
Yeah. Wow. So it's,
Yeah, it's kind of two-pronged there. There's both the electric vehicle and then this driverless technology.
You know, and Gary brought up a good point about, you know, we've had, airlines use it, boats use it for, unassisted driving, but you have to realize that those do not have the amount of traffic that a vehicle does, nor do they have to follow lines on a road where you have the optics. They rely on radar and altitude and stuff like that. So the computing power requirements and the electrical requirements, because you're going to have all these computer
to make
these decisions on, you have, you know, 14 different vehicles surrounding you within, you know, 100 yards, if not more. And it has to track and identify every one of those.
Well, there's also restrictions on when an autopilot can be used on a boat or a plane today still. So
No, there's not.
Really?
Not even in landing and taking off?
Well, in an airplane there is.
Okay.
Commercial airplane, but not in a private pilot, general aviation. There's common sense, of course.
Sure. Wait a minute. That's a human fallible part. Oh, you know, I can't help, guys, Tim, I can't help but think of the movie The Fifth Dimension, which came out with, a long time. It's been out for quite a while, but I love it. I see it every now and then. And there's that taxi ride.
That's right.
With the dummy who is the driver.
Is that the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie?
No.
There was an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie where he has a Johnny.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. That's what I'm thinking of, the Mars one.
Yeah, you're thinking of the one that goes to Mars.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. He ends up tearing the head off the thing. But do we, we kid about that, but do you think as humans we kind of need that crutch to build confidence?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, what crutch are you talking about?
I'm talking about something that looks like a human, even if it's a dummy, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I have not heard anything about manufacturers considering that possibility of putting a dummy.
No. I'm teasing with that. But it's kind of like, how do we, Ed said that, how do we ease our way into comfort with driverless vehicles?
Okay. I don't think we have a choice.
Well, okay, there you go. I mean, we do it when we have to do it. You know, how do they get from the horse and buggy to, you know, getting into the Model T?
Well, the way they're doing it is what we're seeing now with the semi-autonomous vehicles. You're kind of getting your feet wet into the area, and, you know, you already have a situation where you can take your hands off the steering wheel. That's just Cadillac and Audi to come. But the car is basically driving itself. So there's really a learning curve and obviously a little bit of a leap of faith. And, you know, it's a difficult thing to do. But most manufacturers still, you have to have at least a hand on the steering wheel.
Yeah.
Let them know that a person's there. But
okay. Now, I want to ask you this, Tim, because I know that there was a survey taken, I think, maybe by insurancequotes.com. Was it 1,000 people that they interviewed for the graphs that are connected to the article?
That sounds about right.
I think it was, yeah. But anyway, who is more likely, is it going to be grandpa or is it going to be that grandson who's going to be more likely to take on, accept this technology?
There's absolutely no doubt about it. It's the younger people.
Hmm.
By a wide margin, you know, oldies like myself, you know, you're kind of hesitant, a little more careful, and you know you're not bulletproof.
But, we've had enough experience in life.
Yeah, good point,
Gary.
You know, as I get older, I'm thinking that I can't wait for autonomous vehicles because, you know. At some point, I'm not going to be able to drive anymore.
Yeah.
And I certainly want to be able to order a a vehicle to take me to the store, take me to the doctor's office, right. take me, you know, to see my grandkids or my friends. And
right.
and that's a wonderful use of yep. autonomous vehicles.
Yep.
It is.
Yep.
I got to believe that at some point, I just don't want to pay the insurance and mm-hmm. lose the depreciation and all the costs associated because they just don't take vehicles enough as an older person.
You know, right? That's true. I'm really getting fed up of filling up my gas tank three
yep.
times a week.
Yep.
You know, and at some point, that may go away. That's an excellent point.
You know, I really am in that category of I'm living in a senior building. I'm coming up on my 72nd birthday. And while I love having a vehicle of my own and being able to go wherever I want, Gary, you've just described most of my transportation needs, going to the doctors, going grocery. You know, I don't think I may cover more than 200 miles with various little trips in a week, if that. And I'm thinking also of my granddaughter who's in a wheelchair. And she is often using, you know, Lyft or Uber. I'm thinking of the blind. Now, finally, the blind would be able to, if you will, you know.
Well, Foster, I think it goes a lot farther than that because the things that I'm seeing, you know, 10, 20 years out is that we won't own vehicles. The neighborhood association, the condo association, right. your senior yep. homes will right. own the vehicles and we'll the smartphone will know we're getting ready for work and the autonomous vehicle needs to show up from the neighborhood garage or from the garage downstairs and you're just going to go out and get in it and, you know, you'll be charged a fee for that, which is going to be a lot less
mm-hmm.
than owning the vehicle itself.
Tim, I got to ask you a question here because we got about two more minutes to go here, but one of the obvious questions is about insurance. What's that going to do with the insurance industry? When they have these autonomous vehicles on the road,
well, it might be just the maybe the opposite that you might expect. There's little doubt that it's going to happen one day,
mm-hmm.
and the life saving potential, reduction
yeah.
of injuries,
yeah,
you know, it's rooted in the tragic fact that about 94% of the serious crashes are a result of human error.
Mm-hmm.
And automated vehicles have the potential to remove that human yeah. error from the equation. So
wow.
you know, the bottom line is, a situation has to exist in which the software is proven to be less mm-hmm. error-prone than humans.
Yep.
So right now you're and so you could actually have, obviously, lower insurance
mm-hmm.
Rates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So...
That's
but there's no definitive answer
right,
right now. Who's going to be liable? Volvo is the first one to step up to the plate.
Yeah,
and they've accepted full liability for accidents.
Wow, that is something. Tim, we're coming to the end of the program. I want to just tell people they can find more about answers to this kind of question and other ones that you've got posted there by going to insurancequotes.com and looking for Tim Spell's series of articles on these issues that will be top drawer for us in the future. Tim, thanks again so much for being with us.
It was great talking with you guys.
Take care. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. Well, you know, when I saw the articles by Tim Spell at insurancequotes.com, I thought, oh my Lord, I hope I don't end up getting, if I, you know, go to the website, getting what happened to me happen again, which was I went online once, put my name in and information, my phone number and my email address, asking for some quotes, some different quotes. I was bombarded with all sorts of spam and robocalls, and it drove me absolutely nuts just having to block all these calls. And they were local numbers as well. They weren't just the 800 numbers. So I thought, in our own self-defense, it might be good to have Rich Yaroslavsky with us because he has a great article that has just appeared in at Observer.com, where he's a columnist. We've talked with Rich many times in the past as an observer of the news, and he's also the vice president of Smart News. Rich, welcome to the Internet Advisor again.
Great to be here.
Glad to have you back. Well, you, your article I love because, boy, it was really the soft spot for me in dealing with you know, trying to get quotes online from an insurance company, ending up being just spammed to death and, you know, spending a month trying to clean up my emails and the calls. And you just nailed that experience. And looks like you've done some, you've had the same kind of thing happen to you when you moved from East to West Coast.
Yeah, like many people, I kept my cell phone number when I moved from the New York area back out to home out in California. And so now I get these robocalls that appear on my phone, you know, very early in the morning sometimes because they think I'm still in the New York area.
Uh-huh. Now, you've tried, now, to handle this, you tried out a series of applications. And what were some of the ones that you tried out?
Well, I tried out one free app from AT&T, which is my wireless carrier, called Call Protect. And it did an okay job at blocking out some of the spam calls. Mm-hmm. But the big problem that I've been having is this issue that they call neighbor spoofing, where a call comes in that appears to be from your local area code and your local exchange. So you think, oh, maybe it's my kid's school or something.
Yep, yep. Yep.
And you pick up, and then it turns out to be a robocall. And that that AT&T Call Protect didn't do such a great job against those.
I know, I was always curious. Are those valid numbers? Are those, or like you said, those are spoofed, and if you attempted to call back, it would actually ring someone else?
You would probably end up ringing somebody else who is probably going, at the end of their rope because they've been getting hundreds or thousands of replies from people saying, why are you calling me? You know, don't spam me. And these poor people are as much innocent victims as you are.
Yeah, because I remember there was a guy that I work with, I won't mention any names, and he says, hey, you go to this website and you type in this phone number and it looks like you're calling from Blue Cross Blue Shield or you're calling from WJR radio stations, and the person picks up and it's, you know, it's something, it's someone completely else. So you could spoof anyone's number by typing in their phone number. And that was 2 years
it's
ago.
It's a hole in the security system of the telephone system, and there are proposals being debated in technical circles right now to try to block that, fill that hole.
Mm-hmm.
But those things take time. So in the meantime, you get bombarded, and the poor people whose numbers are getting spoofed are being driven crazy.
I had no idea that that hooked up to a real person. Oh, dear.
There was actually an auto dealership in North Carolina who was the victim of that because their number was being used, and so it was being put on online for reports for malicious numbers.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, you brought up a good point. So, I was going to bring up about, I know T-Mobile and AT&T offer a free app, and then for $2.99, you can buy a more advanced application. And so you were evaluating this RoboKiller and you for $2.99 one time or a month
monthly,
purchase.
Yeah.
And you're finding that's working out pretty good for you.
That's doing a much better job. It's available right now for iOS. The Android version, I think, is supposed to launch this month, and it's called RoboKiller. And the way it works is that when you get a call, they're using some advanced audio fingerprinting techniques to identify when it's a junk call. And instead of the call being put through to your phone, it gets put through to the RoboKiller system. So it doesn't ring on your end. And so the spammer ends up talking to the RoboKiller system, which has some nice tools.
Oh, yes, yes.
That lets you torment them back a little bit.
Gary?
Yes. Yeah. So why doesn't the national do not call list work?
Good question, yeah.
The big problem with that is that it probably does work for law-abiding telemarketers. But if you're going to break the law anyway, you know, you're going to completely ignore that. So it's very, very hard to trace the source of these calls. So, you know, I'm sure there are honest, telemarketers and on charitable organizations and all that scrupulously observe the do not call list. But if you decide that you're going to be a lawbreaker anyway, you're not going to pay any attention to it.
Yep.
But we can't put some more emphasis on these phone terrorists and go after them under the anti-terrorist laws?
It is very hard, from what I understand, to trace these calls back. Now, occasionally you'll hear about a major arrest being made of somebody But by the very nature of this business, you know, you can without too much technical infrastructure, you can make 100,000 phone calls, and if you only get a small percentage of people who actually bite, you're ahead of the game.
And
you're willing to break the law.
Yeah, there's some really sad stories about older folks in particular who have, you know, lost life savings and things like that. Rich, we're really kind of close to the end of this. I want you to tell them about one of the applications that's part of RoboKiller. It's called AnswerBot.
Yeah, you get to choose from about 30 pre-recorded messages that are played back to the caller, to the robocaller, who has no idea they haven't reached you. So there's one that answers in a heavy Russian voice and asks, "Is this the Gulag calling?" There's another one, you might want to use this one, that purports to be a radio station that begins, "Hey, I know you called me, but you just won our yacht." And then you also have the opportunity to record your own answer bot. So I recorded one of myself doing an absolutely epic fake coughing jag with repeated gasps. I was very pleased with myself. I thought I deserved an Oscar for it.
What I love about this, Rich Yaroslavsky, is that if you can keep them on the line long enough, it's going to, you know, they're eating up their time, you know, their call time or their bandwidth, if you will.
Well, they're probably stealing the internet, too. So, you know, everything's happening over the internet.
You know, if you can waste their time the way they're wasting your time, that seems to me a fair deal.
And are you wasting their time? Are you really wasting any person's time?
Very often, yes.
Yeah.
You think so? I thought it was a robocall.
Well, the robocall, I mean, it depends. Some of them are pre-recorded messages, in which case they're listening for your responses, and when they get a response, they'll stay on the call.
Right.
Others, sometimes there's a real person there, particularly if they're trying to run a fairly sophisticated scam. There'll be a real person on the line, and they may not immediately appreciate the fact that they haven't reached you, but they've reached one of these answer bots instead.
Mm. Now, you don't have to be listening in on these things. They're happening automatically in the background, right?
Right. And in fact, what happens with RoboKiller is you get a notification on your phone after the call that says, "We blocked this call," and gives you the option to listen to a recording of it.
I gotcha. Okay. Well, Rich, we're already right at the end of our time here right now. I want to thank you again for stopping by. Rich Yaroslavsky, who has been a columnist that we've gone to many times for good news, and this certainly is, if you've been dealing with these stinkers. We'll put information up on our homepage, internetadvisor.net, along with the show notes. Rich, thanks for being with us again, and enjoy a sunny day in California.
Thanks. My pleasure.
All right. Take care. Folks, we're going to take a quick break, step out, and we'll be back in just a little bit to take care of hour number two.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at internetadvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now, it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard. Hi, this is Foster Brown, the co-host and producer of the program, along with Mr. Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Kasten Thomas with the actually half of our show. You'll find the full two-hour podcast on our homepage starting late Sunday night. Oh, don't forget to spring forward as well. This hour, Dr. Eric Cole will show you how to protect yourself from the evil side of the internet, and Mike Brennan and Rick Pickers will talk about Cloud Tech One. Well, we're kind of like Brigadoon on Monday morning. You know, when the sun rises, we suddenly disappear here at WJR, but we do reappear occasionally. And hopefully in April, after all the March Madness is done, we'll be back on regularly with our 2 hours. And that should be from 5 to 7, or it could be from 4 to 6. But somewhere around this time, it'll be 2 hours of the Internet Advisor. Until then, you can enjoy the full 2 hours of it, because we put a podcast out every week. that has both hours. And the last hour, we talked with some experts about driverless cars. Where are, you know, when are they coming? And it was a really interesting conversation, which I hope that you will to tune into. But again, go to internetadvisor.net, and that's on late Sunday night. I will post the edited podcast. But right now, we have Mr. Gary Baker with us from down in Florida, where I don't think, let's see, it's quite sunny right now. The sun just looks like it's setting in the background, or it has set.
Yeah, it just set. So it's still light out, but sun has set, and we're doing the show here with you guys. So it's wonderful to be on the air with in WJR's studios there and the remote studio down here.
I love it. All right, that's Gary. By the way, Gary, this is a feature that we're doing at the beginning of our programs where you get a chance to share with people some of the things that have caught your eye during the week in terms of tech stories. And you have some really interesting... That first one is, matter of fact, we were talking with the engineer here at WJR. There's one screen that is almost entirely on his desktop covered with icons.
Yeah, and how do you use them all? I had that experience this week where I was talking to someone. He said, oh, let me show you what I'm talking about. He swung his notebook around so I could see it. And the screen was just covered with icons and folders. And I'm thinking, yep, how do you keep this organized? He goes, you're supposed to keep it organized? I says, well, why do you put them up there? He goes, I don't know. He says, can you take them off? I said, yeah. Wouldn't that make you feel better? Wouldn't you feel a little bit, like a less cluttered office makes you feel better for a lot of us?
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, yeah. So I said, just delete them. He goes, no, I don't want to delete my folders. I said, all you're deleting is the icon on your desktop. You can still get to your folders using, going to the start menu and getting to them that way, or going right to your folders. But so it was interesting. So next week, I'm going to see him again. I'm going to find out if he's actually cleared off his desktop so he can actually see some. And, it's fun because Microsoft is putting up all sorts of very cool imagery. And they ask, do you like this? And if you say yes, you'll get more images like that. And if you say no, you'll get less images like that. Mm. So clear your desktops. So, Foster, how many icons do you have on?
Let me just check and see. I think I have maybe a dozen and a half, but I have them organized by folders. So that's how I organize a lot of stuff, to have it right at hand. They're usually things like podcasts I'm editing. And I put the components in there.
Well, what a lot of people don't realize is that it actually slows your computer's boot up time, because before it presents you with your Windows desktop, it has to organize those files. The more files you have and icons you have in your desktop. Well, I'm not talking about a Mac. We're talking PCs, Foster. You know, Macs are magic, so it probably doesn't affect them.
I haven't had problems with that, but so, Gary,
it's just slow all the time.
Oh dear! Are there software that can help you organize that?
Well, there's some ideas, right? And so, my friend was saying, well, so what do I do? And I said, well, first of all, there's you can create folders, put everything in folders instead of individual files,
right?
And that's an easy one. But then the folders, they're not organized very well.
Yeah.
Right? So remove any unnecessary icons. I don't have any.
Oh, really?
Why would you have any there? Because they're so easy to get to a different way. And I just like to see the images and keep an uncluttered desktop.
Oh, I got you. The artwork. Yeah, desktop. Yeah, you're right. There's some beautiful images they have out there, right?
Yeah. And it's like an uncluttered office, right? Some people like cluttered office. I tend to feel more relaxed when there's not a lot of clutter, especially things I haven't done. I haven't clicked on some of those in years. I just took them all off. I used to have a few. I don't have any anymore.
Yep.
But daily routines, clean them. And people that have folders, probably Ed does this. Do you do a deep clean? Do you go in and look at your folders and say, hey, I don't need this anymore?
Probably once every 5 years.
Kasten, how about you?
I'm a procrastinator, so I need to do it. But, it's interesting because I was on my wife's computer this week, and talk about clutter, but she's like, don't touch a file. And then on her phone today, I noticed in her inbox on her iPhone that she has 1,375 messages waiting in her inbox to be read.
No kidding.
My goodness.
So,
that would
so
kill
in
me.
Other words, if we want to get a hold of Connie, don't email her because she'll never answer, right? You can't get to him.
If her voicemail's not full.
I know with Jenny, my wife, I am tempted, sorely tempted when I get on her. She'll ask me to do something on her computer. All these files, I want to take, you know, like a day and just organize it all. But I would pay
don't
a heavy price.
Don't you dare.
That's exactly it. If you want stay married for the rest of your life.
Men are from Mars. Women are from Venus. That's if you try to mess with the Venus file structure, you're in no man's land. You're on your own.
Oh. Yeah, Connie says, I know where to find it.
Exactly.
Okay.
So organize with care, huh, Gary? That's another one of the caveats that we have here.
That's right. I would just... And again, some people can put up with the clutter and it doesn't bother them. Other people feel a little anxious about being on the computer. Maybe that's why.
Yep.
Right?
It
declutter,
could be.
See if we can and de-risk and de-stress your online experience.
Great tips from Gary on his Tech Slice, which we have at this time normally at the beginning of our program. Mr. Gary Baker, we're down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, aboard the Shared Adventure, which is his boat that he uses now on the weekends. So thank you, Gary, for being there for that. Stick around. We're going to be talking with Dr. Eric Cole about protecting ourselves. This evening, we're talking with Dr. Eric Cole, who is the CEO of Secure Anchor and a former CTO of McAfee and Lockheed Martin, a member of the Commission on Cybersecurity for President Obama, and a security advisor to Bill Gates and his family, and the author of a new book called Online Danger and How to Protect Yourself and Your Loved Ones from the Evil Side of the Internet. Dr. Cole, we're glad that we made connections with you. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're delighted. You have quite an illustrious career that you've, and a whole lot of books that you've written about the Internet. In particular, why did you pull this particular thread about protecting ourselves from the evil side of the Internet when it seems that we can't?
Right, and that's the real reason why I wrote this, is for the last 25 years, I was focused on educating technical people, teaching the security engineers how to implement effective security. And what I realized a year and a half ago is it's not the technical people that's the problem. It's the average folks who don't realize the dangers and don't realize they're a target. And that's why I wrote this, to not only raise the awareness, but show them there's practical things they can do to protect themselves online.
Okay, we can then do some things, because it seems, Dr. Cole, that, and I know with Kasten Thomas is with us in studio here, and he has his own company that does security work as well. And I know both of you, matter of fact, I found out about you through Kasten on LinkedIn. Both of you are involved in trying to keep ahead of the hackers. And it just seems that it's a never-ending battle that we keep on losing.
Exactly, and it's one of those things you have to remember, that whenever you add in functionality, you're going to decrease your security. But the thing that people forget is not only they're a target, but how the adversary works. For example, anytime an email arrives in our inbox, we are so eager to see what it is that without even thinking, we open attachments, we click on links. Yet, unfortunately, one click is all it takes to get compromised. So if we were just a little more aware, and when we received an email, thought before we clicked, we could stop a lot of those compromises and a lot of those attacks. We're just making it too easy for the adversary.
That is a very, very good point. So stop and think. It's adding what Gary used to call the common sense factor to this. And I'm sure that is a big part of it, which is, you know, don't just jump in to responding to this.
Exactly. And you just nailed it. For some reason, when it comes to the internet and it comes to online, we lose common sense. Yeah. Things we would never do in the real world, we would do online. For example, if you were at the mall tonight and some stranger walked up to you and said, "What's your name? Where do you live? What's your phone number?" You would walk away. You'd be like, "Are you crazy?" But tonight, you might be surfing the web. You visit a website you've never been to before, mm-hmm. and it asks you for your name, phone number, and address. What do? You freely give it out. Yeah. Why would you give it out to a stranger on cyberspace but not do it in the real world? We just do crazy things because we don't understand the dangers.
I had an interesting experience this morning about giving information out. I was working at a pantry where we give food out to people, and a guy who was homeless was in front of me, and he had to sign up for the program, and as part of that, he needed to give us his Social Security number. He said, "I won't do that." He said, "I'll only give you my last four digits." It was interesting because this guy was really disabled in so many other ways. I think he was high, but he still knew enough that he would not give me more than his last four digits.
We should get him on the show.
The rest of the conversation would be very strange, unfortunately. All right, so what are some of the other first steps that people can do in the internet experience, you know, to minimize their vulnerability for the bad guys?
And that's really the name of the game. You're never going to be 100% secure mm-hmm. unless you go Amish. Unless you give up all the technology, just give up your phone, there's always going to be risks. But the trick is minimize. So, yeah. For example, look at your cell phone. If you're like most people, you probably have 80 to 100 apps installed that you never use.
Yep.
You have no idea what they're doing. Get rid of them. Any one of them could be spying on you and accessing information. Reduce your attack surface. Delete those applications. Minimize where you go, and always remember that online applications, social media, do have security built in, but it's turned off by default for convenience, so you have to turn it on. So always look for the security features and try to enable them.
Okay, look for security features. You're mentioning, because I have a ton of these things, and
well, they're for, a lot of them are free for a reason.
That's true.
You know, some of them are, you know, banking apps I would assume are safe, and airlines, and, you know, in here in Michigan, I have a DTE app that for outage reporting and for outage maps, because I live mm-hmm. in the sticks, and mm-hmm. we lose electricity like 10 times a year.
Yeah.
So, but other than that, I mean, a lot of other apps, you know, like my jogging tracking app, if it didn't come from Samsung, I ain't installing it, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, but you have to be cautious because, well, especially on Google phones, on Apple it's not as big of an issue, but just because an application says Bank of America or Comerica or something yeah. like that does not necessarily mean that it's the Comerica or Bank of America app.
Yep.
So they're tricking you on the stores as well.
I know the apps. Interesting, Dr. Cole. I have an experience that they're casting with apps I have with email that comes from. As a matter of fact, some brilliant stuff. Like it says it's from Apple or it's from Bank of America. I mean, perfectly done. There's no errors in grammar and things like that.
Cut and paste is wonderful.
Oh, man, it is amazing what they can do with that. But you're saying that the applications themselves, Dr. Cole?
Yes, absolutely. And one thing I always tell my kids, there is no such thing in life as free. The applications aren't free. Most of those things that you use that you think are free, what you're actually doing, if you look at the licensing, is you're bartering. You're agreeing to give them access to your information
yeah.
in return for the free use of the app. So most of those free apps, they actually have the right to be able to monitor, look at your activity, and use that for target marketing purposes. So you always want to be careful of those words free, because you might get more than you bargained for.
All right, let me pose something to all of the learned doctors here. Gary, you're included in this, of course. When you are offered, let's say, to sign, you get to a website that you really want, and it says that you have the option of signing up with your email and a complex password, or simply with Facebook or Google?
Google.
Or Google.
Or LinkedIn sometimes.
Or LinkedIn, yeah. That's exactly, LinkedIn more often now. Which of those options should I be taking, and which should I stay away from? Dr. Cole, let's start with you.
Oh, Gary. I never sign up with any of the other applications. I always create a new username and password for that particular site.
Okay.
And I would say from a pure security perspective, you want to have a unique password for each of those sites. And ideally, if they support two-factor, which many sites do where they'll text you a one-time password, you want to do that. But here's the real answer. What risk are you willing to accept for convenience? Are you willing to accept the fact that if your one password at LinkedIn or Facebook gets compromised, all of your other apps, all of your banking and everything else is also going to be owned and compromised? Is that an acceptable risk to you? In most cases, people would say no, but the problem is they pick convenience, but they never look at what the security impact is when they make that decision.
We've talked about that. You know, there's a whole class of applications called password managers that are a great tool for
that. Yes, exactly. I was going to talk about that. Do you have a favorite one for that, Dr. Cole?
I'm sort of old school. I'm one of those weird, strange people that I actually remember 37 different passwords in my head. I actually do.
Oh, my Lord.
Manager, but if you're not as crazy and insane as me, yeah, there's many good passwords out there.
I got leaky memory problems already. Dr. Cole, hang on. We're going to come back and talk some more about keeping ourselves safe online and avoiding the evil side of the internet. Dr. Eric Cole is our guest here. I want to talk to you also about your CIA experience and what that new acronym stands for. Coming back on the Internet Advisor. Glad you're here. I once again want to remind you that you can get the full 2-hour podcast of our program. That's 2 hours if you go to internetadvisor.net Sunday night. We'll have it all displayed there for you. Right now, our guest is Dr. Eric Cole, who is the CEO of Secure Anchor and formerly worked with companies like McAfee and Lockheed Martin, as a member of the Commission on Cybersecurity for President Obama, and a security advisor to Bill Gates and his family. Also, author of a whole bunch of books, and we're talking about one of the most recent ones now, Online Danger, How to Protect Yourself and Your Loved Ones from the Evil Side of the Internet. You know, this isn't necessarily looks like the evil side of the Internet. Matter of fact, it kind of masquerades as the newest technology to be at our every whim. And Gary Baker, we were talking about this during the break, and that's all these personal assistants out there. Eric, how do we protect ourselves from Google Home or from all these other marvelous devices that are out there right now? What's the one from Amazon?
Alexa.
Alexa.
Alexa, yes. Yeah, so what it comes down to is always looking at both sides of the equation. Most people make decisions purely on functionality. They go in and go, wow, having some device in my house that I can talk to, it can play music, it can make phone calls, that's awesome. But you always have to step back and look at what the exposures are. Anybody could potentially access it. It could record anything that's being used in your house. It could be used as evidence if a crime is committed. And always ask yourself, what are the benefits? What are the risks? And can I live with the risks? Because most people, when they understand what the true risks are, they start unplugging their Alexa. They start turning off these assistants because they just didn't look at both sides. So always step back and say, what are the exposures? And ask yourself if those are acceptable or not.
Yeah, go ahead, Gary.
You know, Dr. Cole, sometimes we mix up security with privacy. And a lot of times, and especially like with my kids, the younger generation, they don't expect privacy.
Yeah.
They do expect security. What's the difference and why do we care?
And you're absolutely right. And that's sort of a fine line between those two. I sort of, as a parent, always put them together. But to me, privacy is, can somebody find out your information? And security is, can somebody get that information in an unauthorized manner?
Mm.
And in my opinion, if my child installs applications and they say yes to location tracking, even though they admitted to it, technically that's a privacy issue because they outwardly accepted the fact that this application can track their location. But if that application is being used by a child predator to be able to track and find my child, that becomes a major security issue for me as a parent. So I guess I sort of put those together because most of the time, if you're leaking your private information, that very well in the hands of an adversary could become a major security issue.
And the different ages. You're getting into the area of social. Kasten, you want to add something to that?
No, I'm good.
You mentioned that you're getting in the area of social media and how we react to it differently. What are some other things that you teach your kids about proper social media etiquette?
First and foremost is I make sure they recognize there is no delete button on the internet. There is no delete button on social media. Once you hit post, send, or save, that information will exist forever. And what a lot of people don't realize is colleges and employers are using social media to perform cyber background checks to determine who they should or should not accept, because you could have the best grades on the planet, you can have a perfect record, but if you're very controversial online and you look like you're a high risk, the college is going to go, it's not worth the exposure. I have 20 other really good kids. I'm going to take them. And we've seen that in the last couple of years where colleges are not admitting people or not admitting children because they have some crazy pictures online and they just look like an unacceptable risk.
Right. Or just on a Twitter account or, you know, who you have those link. It could be even probably LinkedIn, but probably less likely on Facebook or WhatsApp or whatever else.
Instagram. A long list.
Right.
Whatever.
It's a long list. A really long list nowadays. Boy, as a parent raising kids now. And as you said, Gary, the kids, and it would seem the millennials, even Gen Xers, are just kind of, well, who cares? Who knows what I have?
Well, because there is really no privacy.
Yep.
And they realize that. It's the parents. It's us at our age. We still have this kind of false sense that we can keep our information private and very, very difficult to do. As Dr. Cole said many times, because we freely give it away. We freely turn on some characteristics or some functionality on applications that give we expect that we give that to Google or to Delta or to a major corporation would keep it safe, except for their use and maybe their partners' use for advertising to us. My kids, they think, you know what? If they know what I want and they want to tell me about a product they have that's what I want, then I don't have to go find it.
Yep.
Well, I used to keep all my personal private financial information securely stored at Equifax, but that changed a while back.
Oh, dear. Yeah, a lot of those. Well, by the way, folks, we're running a little out of time, but I want to let people know that you can go. We're going to post this on our show notes that you can find out more about these best practices. Get the book. Go to Amazon.com/Eric Cole, and you'll find this book in there. Or you can go with Dr. Cole. You have a direct website that people can go to.
Yeah, OnlineDanger.com. If you go to OnlineDanger.com, I actually will give you a free chapter so you can actually try before you buy to see if you like what you're reading.
Excellent. We'll make sure that we have posted that address, too. I wanted to talk with you a little bit about, at the beginning of your career, you have a little video that you have on there. Talk about the fact that you worked for the CIA for, was it 14 years or so? When you began
just
your
career? Just about 12 years, so a little tired.
Okay. Yep. All right. But that was the beginning of your career, wasn't it, in terms of dealing with security?
Absolutely. And it's real quick, it's a funny story, because when I got hired by them, I was given the option to work in either the Network Operations Center to design and build networks or in this new field called security.
Uh-huh.
And all of my college professors were like, Eric, you got to go with the network. That's the growth area. Security is just a fad. But I liked it, and I didn't listen to them. And now I sort of laugh, going, yeah, I think it's a big fad at these points. Right?
My goodness. Well, now you've created, with an acronym, CIA. Help me with that. What does that stand for?
So we sort of jokingly say that like the CIA stands for Central Intelligence Agency, but what I'm trying to do is get you CIA. Mm-hmm. We're getting your information confidential, secure, and properly protected. So I sort of try to do a spin on that, trying to say that I'm going to make sure you're aware and understand what your information is and where it's located.
Okay, so the C stands for?
Cyber secure.
Okay, cyber secure.
Informed and aware. Cyber secure, informed and aware.
And aware. Okay, very good. CIA comp. All right, excellent. I want to catch that one by putting it up on our page as well. Guys, you have any other questions for Dr. Cole before he goes? Because I want to. How about you, Cass?
No, I just want to say that, you know, Dr. Cole's experience is as deep as anybody. I mean, we've got a rock star who's on regularly, Dan Lorman. Eric is right up there, and Dan Lorman specializes in state, local government security.
Right.
Eric Cole handles the whole world, and he's an accomplished author. And really, you know, I'm a big part of his fan club because he really has the ability to distill, you know, complex issues into something that's really understandable. And I haven't seen the book yet, but, you know, if it's anything like his other work, it's stellar. It's useful. Get out to Amazon.com or wherever fine books are sold.
Yep.
And get the book. It's got to be good.
Yeah, OnlineDanger.com is another great place for that. Dr. Eric Cole, again, thank you so much for having been with us this afternoon and evening. And really, folks, the nice thing about this, what we wanted to introduce you to was somebody who could explain things, as Kasten said, in terms that a layperson can understand and take away some real nuggets. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Cole. We look forward to finding out more about keeping ourselves secure from that book.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And remember, to be cybersecure, informed, and aware, be CIA.
I love it. Thank you so much, Dr. Eric Cole. Folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we've got a couple people who are going to talk about a very important conference. It's really a stellar conference coming up. It's an inaugural one in the state of Michigan, and that is the IoT Connect Conference coming up in April. And two guests will be with us. That's Mike Brennan, who is the editor of MI Tech News, and Rick Beckers from Cloud Tech One, both with us in just a moment to talk about this conference coming up. Well, I want to thank you once again for joining us here. Thank you, Dave, and thank you, Danielle, who have been helping with engineering the program, the folks behind the glass, and my co-hosts, Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Kasten Thomas. Thank you guys for being with us here for the show live, and we hope in April we'll be back after March Madness with both hours of our program here available for you. And the second hour, this one, normally is open line where you get to call with your questions. And until we get to that place, you can go to internetadvisor.net, and there is a Contact Us button there. And just put your question in there in as much detail about your system, and we'll try to get back to you as quickly as we can during the week with some answers for you from our crew. Right now, at this time of the program, we normally have MI Tech News and the headlines with its editor, Mr. Mike Brennan. But, Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Foster. Always a pleasure.
And along with you, you have a very important partner in a program we're going to be talking about. A conference is coming up, and that's Mr. Rick Beckers from Cloud Tech One. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing well, Foster. Thanks for having me on.
I'm glad to have you. The two of you are, now, normally we would talk at this time about MI Tech News, Michigan, and that's where you can, every week, get a tremendous look at what's going on both in the tech world and also in entrepreneurial circles, if you're interested in that kind of thing. Free for nothing, twice a week. Both audio and video feeds, as well as the printed matter, with Mr. Mike Brennan getting the headlines for us. And this week, however, Mike and Eric, we're going to focus, Rick, on the conference that's coming up, the IoT Connect Conference. And Mike, why don't you start off by talking about what the IoT is, and then Rick, maybe pick up on what's so important about this IoT.
Well, starting off with, it's IoTTechConnect.com.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is, Internet of Things, gosh, it's everything these days. And we're going to be covering a lot of that in the conference. I've been coordinating with all the usual suspects that I typically do business with at MITechNews.com. So we have AR and VR. You'll be able to try on that gear if you've never experienced virtual reality or augmented reality. We're going to have a workshop there for folks. The Michigan Science Center's CEO, Tanya Matthews, is our mistress of ceremonies.
Right.
She's also going to be doing a STEM education workshop with high school girls, and assisting her will be Monica Wheat. I know you know all these names, Monica from Digirati Girls. And so we're going to be showing them what IoT is, and hopefully these girls then will pursue careers in STEM and other fields in technology.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we're going to have a drone workshop. That was on again, off again, now it's on again.
Ah, okay.
And so you can't fly them in the hotel, by the way, it's April 4th at the Troy Marriott. But we'll show you how they work and how they give them, you know, how they're being used more and more for business.
Oh, yes, they're being used inside as well as outside, which
is absolutely, yeah,
absolutely fascinating.
Amazing what they're using. And, of course, then we have five tracks of stuff led by our autonomous vehicle and connected tech track. And that'll be looking at what's happening with, say, M-City and the American Center for Mobility and the MSU R&D Center, where they're developing all these autonomous vehicle technologies that we'll be rolling out over the next couple of years. We're going to show you what they look like and hopefully have some of these vehicles there, too. The Army has promised to bring a vehicle. We're working on May Mobility to bring their electric transit bus that they were using
That's
in downtown
right.
Detroit.
Yes. Yes.
So we got lots of stuff going on.
Wow, it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be at the Troy Marriott on April the 4th. I'm going to be there as well, by the way, I'm hoping, as a matter of fact, we can get Ed down there so that people can get to actually shake his hand and see his smiling face and Kasten, perhaps.
Well, he's such a media celebrity, he has to be there. I mean, he doesn't want to disappoint his fans, right?
Hey, yeah. Hey, Rick, Rick Becker's from CloudTech One. You were really part of the emphasis behind this, because as I understand, you know, you've attended a lot of these Internet of Things or IoT conferences in other places and finally said, why not Michigan?
Exactly. I've been an early adapter of collecting knowledge on IoT since I became aware of it. I'm an editorial advisor for some national media groups, and I've spoken on IoT in Vegas and San Jose, Silicon Valley, et cetera. Mike and I attended a show out in Chicago, and mm-hmm. we left Chicago thinking to ourselves, well, we can do better than that. And
yeah.
the people in Michigan in general are, you know, already tied into IoT because of autonomous vehicles. And our thoughts were, there's so much talent here that we need to showcase it.
Yep.
So that was the presence, I guess, of
right.
coming up with the conference.
Right. It's wonderful. So this will be Michigan's kind of really big show of what's
yep.
going on. Hey, can somebody give me a layman's definition of IoT? What is that? And how is it different from anything? Go ahead.
Sure. I mean, the Internet of Things is just as simple as it sounds. It's if you have any type of device that can be used for any purpose that can be connected to the Internet by any means, whether it be wired, wireless, satellite, you name it. And with 5G coming, the whole world's going to be blanketed with that capability.
Mm.
So now what businesses are doing, and consumers too, of course, is they're developing systems and technologies that will allow them to do the things that they've done analog in the past and do them dynamically with the Internet of Things so that they can improve their productivity and efficiencies and awareness and manage their businesses better.
See, and this, I would imagine, Kasten, is a huge area for concerns for security.
Oh, absolutely.
Because of all the information that's flowing back and forth.
Yeah, there have been some attacks specifically going after smart cameras and thermometers and things like that. Not so
wow.
much attacking them, but penetrating those, logging in, and then using those to go out and attack other things. There's a famous case of a refrigerator that was sending out email relays.
Oh, my God.
So, gentlemen, that was the reason why we have Kasten as one of our track chairmen.
Yes.
Hey, there we go.
Together a presence of people in the cybersecurity industry to tell people all about it.
That's excellent.
Yeah, tell folks who you're going to have on your panel, Kasten. I know you're pretty well set at this point.
Oh, goodness. We've got the state CISO coming in, Richard Stennen, who's been on the show quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And a number of other luminaries around connected car, medical device security, and Internet of Things in general. So it's really tailored toward business executives and people who are involved with everything from utilities to telecommunications to healthcare.
It's amazing.
State and local government.
It's amazing.
Streetlights are, you know, connected to the internet. So are connected to a network
that's
connected to the internet. So all of these things, imagine if a hacker could get access into a traffic control system. That's very, very scary.
The thing about the show is that it's going to be Michigan experts. So you'll be able to meet these folks after the show. You'll be able to work with them if you want. So we're going to really showcase Michigan IoT.
I bet, Ricky, we're going to say something.
Yeah, we've got one new track that I'm pretty excited about. And you know, all of this technology and stuff, you'd think, okay, that's for the one tough nerd or the nerds all around in general. But what do you do with it?
Yeah.
So this new track is how to make money with IoT.
Ah, okay, there we go.
Right?
As you say, the bottom line, I like it. Well, by the way,
how can I get off my track and get involved in that one? That's the one I want to attend. and the other thing that we can't forget is there's a very nice Afterglow networking event at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah.
You can't forget about that.
Where is that going to be at?
That's going to be at the hotel.
At the hotel. Yeah. Oh, wow, fantastic. So when does this start? What are the nitty-gritty on when it starts?
7:30 in the morning is when you kind of get registered and eat your breakfast, which we provide. Hey, by the way, we didn't mention, this is only $20 to get into the show.
Wow.
And we feed you. We give you breakfast to lunch. So clearly we're not making money on that ticket. But we want to get as many folks in as possible to get them exposed to what's going on. So 7:30, 8:30 breakfast, 8:30 to 9 is when the keynotes led by Tanya Matthews start. And then the tracks go 9 to noon, then there's a lunch break for an hour. And then 1 to 4, and then Tel Gennison from Kaiba Accelerator is putting on a $50,000 IoT pitch competition from 4 to 5:30. And then, of course, we have the VIP reception in the evening. We have a surprise guest that we're not able to announce at this time, but he will be someone that you will want to meet, but we just can't say yet who that is.
Oh, wow. All of that for $20, and it's going to be at the Troy Marriott. And that is beginning, this is April the 4th, so if you are at all interested or know somebody in a business that is, they're becoming aware of the fact that IoT, the Internet of Things, is something that is part of their world and that they need to become both knowledgeable and find other people who are in that area and network with them, this is the event to be there for. And we're looking forward to that on April the 4th. Go ahead, guys. What were you going to say, Mike?
We got 24 days left. We do still have some sponsorships, some exhibitor space. We have the VIP tickets. You want to get in on that. And let me give a number. Anybody has any questions?
Yeah, we've got a lot of that already online. So we're wrapping up the program right now, Rick. But I'll make sure to point people to our show notes where they can find all that information about how they can get hold of more information about the conference coming up. Mike Brennan, thank you very much, editor of the MI Tech News, and thank you, Rick Beckers from Cloud Tech One, for being with us as well and for being the force behind this. Guys, it's been a great show. Thank you to our engineers here at WJR and to Ed and to Kasson, to Gary. Gary, good night down there in Florida. Thanks for being with us. And for the rest of you, we look forward to being back with you on your regular basis in April, where you can join us for 2 hours of the Internet Advisor every Saturday. Until then, don't forget to go to InternetAdvisor.net, and you can catch our podcast starting Sunday night.